Revenue Chat episode 104. The Dream Business community wants to help you with your career and business. Are you ready for accelerated success? Check it out. The Dream Business community at tonydurso.com/community. Get the Revenue Chat mobile app for your Android or iPhone. It's free. Download from your cell phone or smart device at tonydurso.com/mobile.
This is Revenue Chat Radio with your host, Tony D'Urso, interviewing successful entrepreneurs and giving you actionable advice and insights. Let's rev it up.
Hello again and welcome to this episode of Revenue Chat. I'm your host, Tony D'Urso. In our last episode 103, Yolanda Tucker provided a very informative look at the subject of contracts with what you must do before signing. Great insight is provided regarding negotiating. Everything is negotiable and she really drills this down. Great interview. On this episode, we have Carol Sanford, who decodes your business DNA and aligns systems to it, yielding game-changing creativity, market leadership, and financial returns. She assists the top companies in the world, you know, the ones that are well-known household names, an experienced thought leader and expert that brings about innovative, meaningful, and profitable change. Carol tells us the three non-negotiable imperatives for 10x growth. Her website is carolsanfordinstitute.com. All right, revenue crew, let's rev it up. Get ready for Carol to tell us the three non-negotiable imperatives for 10x growth. Here we go. Hello, Carol. How are you?
I am excellent. Tony, how are you? And it's great to talk to you. Tell me how you are.
I'm really, really good. You know, we've been through a bit to get you on this show, and I'm very excited because we have some very good topics to discuss, very sophisticated, very high level. So I can't wait, and I hope that the Revenue Chat audience is as excited as I am. And of course, thanks so much for making it go right to take this time to hang out with us on Revenue Chat.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, great. Let's just kind of jump in here, Carol. I did mention a little bit about you in our intro, and perhaps you'd like to fill us in a little bit and tell us, please, how you became an expert in your field.
Well, I always tell people I'm still learning, and so, you know, expert means you're at the top. But what I did is, first, I ran two businesses of my own, one of which I took public, I sold it to a public company, and it was a technology company, and it was a very early technology company on how it is that you make patterns for clothing using mathematical algorithms very early. I secondly ran a real estate company. Both of those I founded, and that taught me a lot. Then I studied with some of the masters in the world, those who founded the transformational work in the Procter & Gamble soap business, and then took what they were doing there out into other parts of P&G and eventually out into the world where I ran into them. And that work of working with people who had led extraordinary innovation took their work into DuPont, where I also worked with them. So I have been through so many different industries, and eventually you learn that there are patterns and themes that have nothing to do with the kind of industry or even what country it's in. So I would say that's probably how I've gotten the wisdom. What it is that I have is by a lot of experience. I also was a professor and taught in Silicon Valley, and so I hung out with Barney Oliver in Hewlett-Packard, with Steve Jobs in Apple, with other folks eventually who were across Intel. So you work with a lot of smart people. You pick up a lot, and luckily I was able to teach them a lot.
That is very impressive, Carol, a very impressive list. Thank you. Wow. Now, I did want to ask you something right before, just so that I can get clear and as well as the Revenue Chat audience, because your title, what you do, is you deal with regenerative business education. So just before we jump into the three non-negotiable imperatives for 10x growth, perhaps you could give a little blurb on what is regenerative business education, please?
Yes. Well, first, it is not consulting because it doesn't have a program pre-prepared that I say, here, do this. It is instead one that teaches you the patterns, and I engage with companies in thinking about how those patterns can be used to develop a unique and distinctive pattern for them. The word regenerative is very important because it means for people to generate what they're going to do from the essence of who they are. And that is always related to building capacity rather than to just serving needs or doing less harm. So the idea of educating people to be themselves, including all the people who are in there, in a contribution way that grows the capability of everyone they serve, whether it's directly customers or students or parenting.
Got it. Very good. Very good. I like that. Very high level, very different and unique in today. And I know you have some really interesting contrarian views that are also successful views. So let's kind of dive into this. No particular order. Just a couple things I'd like to check with you, please. For example, how do you raise revenue and grow your client base? Very general, sweeping there question.
I am a very strange animal in that I have not looked for a client since 1978. My work has all been 100% by referral or by people who heard me speak and it resonated. So I have been very lucky, and because, as you hinted, I have a phenomenal track record, my clients tend to grow their revenues 40 to 65%. Per annum in the first 5 years that we change how they're doing. That slows down a little bit, but it can be picked up and charged anytime people want to. I do that by being an educator. I still am connected to many universities. I write books. I tend to have long-term relationships with everyone I work with. Every CEO I've ever worked with, I am still friends with and very close with them as they move to different businesses. I also have communities of people who want to learn what I do that join a membership group I have and meet with me either in Europe or Mexico or the States from somewhere between 4 and 16 times a year. And they pay an annual membership fee to be a part of that and have access to the proprietary materials I have, which I don't publish, and a lot of one-on-one interaction with me. So that's my business model.
Wow. Again, impressive. And I don't want to keep using the same word. I usually don't. I'm not the person that always says the same word. But all I can think of is amazing, impressive. That is incredible to have all for so many years, for so many decades, work only in business only by referrals. Yeah. I love it. How would you get the whole organization focused and on the same page when you do these sweeping changes or whatever?
Very simple. You start with revealing, not making up. It's not a branding exercise, but you reveal what the essence of that company is from the time it was founded. So DuPont Corporation was founded by E.I. DuPont. We went back and we looked at who is E.I. DuPont and what was he bringing into a business called DuPont. And it turns out that he had been working with the king, the last reigning king in France, helping him blow up the revolutionaries. And it suddenly occurred to him that even though he was an expert with gunpowder, he no longer believed and joined the revolutionaries. And he was a lord, so it got him in a lot of trouble. When he came to the States, one of the things became very clear is he knew how to manage the risk of very highly volatile materials. Every business and every product that's been grown that did well inside of DuPont had that managing risk component to it. So once working with Chad Holliday, who was the CEO and president, once we got back to that, we ended up I didn't have anything to do with decisions, but I own stock in them, so I start to really care. But sold off all the businesses which didn't need an ability to incredibly manage risk, and then you keep those, and you have everyone in the organization connect to that essence, and you ask, what do you know? How do you contribute to it? You ask every functional group, how do you contribute to managing risk? How would you improve our ability to do that? So you take that theme and you run it through the entire organization, and out of it, you build a corporate direction which people can resonate with. Because there's one other funny thing, Tony, is people are attracted to the essence of a business when they get hired, but they don't know it. So we often set it up as a part of hiring practices and say, here, this is what this business is about. And I'm making it really simple right now. It's a bit more than just the words managing risk, but that's a shorthand. And when people look at you and they say, I don't know, I just wanted a job, you know they don't fit. So you are aligning from the moment you hire through the minute they're in a job, through being a manager, through every function, through every project. It all is wrapped around what the essence of that company is, and it's authentic.
Amazing. I love it. Sounds so simple, but it's definitely a lot of hard work. And I like the fact that you go back to the roots, to the original purpose and the whole original proposition and reason for the company in the first place, in a way.
It's embedded by the founder. So it's not just a casual act. You have to do all, and it's a lot more complicated than I'm making it sound to find it, because people don't know how to go to the level of the deep pattern that's there. They go to the level of the service and they say things like good customer service or great products or innovation. None of that will differentiate you and none of it will align you. So it takes a bit of practice. And of course, that's what I mean by education. I spend a lot of time teaching not only my corporate folks how to find it and do a lot of it with them, because I have a lot of experience in doing it, and then embedding it out into the organization, plus helping find that CEO's essence and how does it resonate in every customer and market's essence. That kind of work takes a great deal of effort, and it's why I have an education company and why I teach at universities, to make it more available, because I've seen the power of it.
Most excellent. Got it. Very cool. Now, in this next question, I know I feel compelled to get into this sometimes, and I know I should not. So, Revenue Chat audience here, pay attention to this one, because a lot of us step into it. And the question is for you, Carol, how do you avoid the competitive trap of dropping prices?
Well, part of it is people chase only revenue. There are really, we talked about that there are three non-negotiable imperatives. One of them is revenue. It's actually what is financial effectiveness? And revenue is only one of them, and that's like money coming in the door. But the second one is margins, and the third one is earnings. So if you were to draw a triangle and put those three on there, if you aren't thinking about all three of those, you end up competing on just revenue with yourself, with your last year, you know, with what it was your goals were and how far short you fall. So one of the things you have to do for revenue is you have to be innovating all the time in terms of operations in order to keep revenue high. And if you're not, you'll end up trying to discount because your prices are creeping up. The second thing you have to do is you have to have the qualitative characteristics, very important idea, where the characteristics of the product that you offer exactly resonate with the people who you have chosen to serve. So there's a couple of things in there. If you start trying to serve everybody, you can't really determine what those qualitative characteristics are for that particular market. So everybody knows Apple. I worked with Apple when they were brand new. I was connected with them at San Jose State University when they were going public. One of the things that was very clear from the beginning with the engineers who were coming into graduate business school with me is they were all being hammered with, is the word they used, with the idea that they had a particular market, and it was the creatives and the particularly sophisticated creatives who were creating everything from media to design. Now, if you know who that market is, you now know what do they need, and it's very different than someone who is doing an engineering kind of thing that wants to learn just about coding. Now, you need some of those people, but Apple built what it built because it knew exactly who its market was, and it didn't matter what level or age they were, but they were working on being creative and being able to do it in a sophisticated way. Now what you're doing is you're getting the qualitative characteristics that drive not only revenue, because you're really serving the right people, but drive margins, because what people want is that differentiation, and that comes from product innovation, where revenue comes much more from operations innovation for those qualitative characteristics. And if you can get the margins going also, where you're constantly bringing in, or regularly, I shouldn't say constantly, but an appropriate time where you're beginning to see that you have the next ring of offering and the timing is right. And that's a bigger question we don't have time to talk about today, how you know timing on innovation of product offerings. That will keep getting you to be paid more for your product. Apple never has dropped its prices. It's never discounted anything. And who knows? We'll see what it does under Tim Rice, but I think that probably will stay the case. Now you don't have revenues being buffeted all the time. But if you're pursuing only revenue, that's all you can see is I've got to get more money, and you begin to collapse, your margins begin to collapse. You then are costing more money to run the operation, and you're dead in the water, and you got to do discounts.
Got it. Which leads into the next question, which is, of course, what you've just described there, Carol, is a sort of a trap, and a lot of businesses do tend to get into this. How do you avoid doing discounts?
Well, the discounts come as a response to dropping prices, right? Because then you start thinking, I've got to get more people buying. You think of them an expansion mindset, because if you're thinking of expansion only, it means you want more people for the same product, and you're hoping that just by volume, you will go there. You avoid it by doing the combination of operational innovation and by a pricing that is clearly to everyone a value that is greater than the other things in the market. That's what people are mostly looking for. Now, you're going to have about 10% to 12% of any population who won't buy it unless it's the cheapest one on the market. Do not compete with people doing that, because you will have to do discounts. You want to be on the other end of having this wonderful relationship with the people you've chosen to make a difference with, who count on you to do that. And once you've done that and you innovate for them, you will not have dropping prices and you will never have to do discounts, because your market doesn't want the discount. They want the innovative advantage of the value that you're providing.
I love it. I'm going to actually study that a little more myself for my own strategy. I love that, Carol. Thank you for sharing that. That's very smart. Just sort of ignore and not try to go after those, as we call the tire kickers, or those always looking for the best price or best deal. Go for those looking for the value, and you don't have to drop your price. It's a smaller market, perhaps, but not really in terms of the market that you need for the price and the value that you are providing.
Well, and you spend more trying to get those people who are at the fixed end of the market. You will never be able to get a margin increase. And that's what you want to shoot for. The discount and dropping prices are all from chasing revenue and market share. Revenue and market share mean you work harder and harder over time for fewer and fewer dollars of the pie. If instead you're working on the innovation, which is where the value is, something new, something exciting, something that makes me be able to do something extraordinary with my life, now people pay more for that. And now what you've got is a steady revenue. Now you put your energy not into chasing low-end prices, but into pursuing the creation of real innovation.
Brilliant and insightful. Thank you, Carol. I love it. Really, really good points there, and something really to apply, because the application of that can take any business, you know, provided you sort out and work out your strategy, that can change any business in the next, I would say, months, 6 months. You could get a whole new income stream just from the application, the wise application of just that point alone.
Yeah, so, if you're a tiny business, if you're larger, it'd probably take you a year, 9 months to a year. But yeah, I think on small businesses, you can get a big turnaround depending on how rapid and how complicated your offerings are.
The Dream Business community wants to help you with your career and business. As you know, jobs can be fickle. Here today, gone tomorrow. And owning a business has its own frailties. Bloomberg says 8 out of 10 entrepreneurs fail in the first 18 months. A Harvard study says 3 out of every 4 venture-backed firms fail. And there's other sources with shocking figures of their own, which all point to one very conclusive point. These are scary times we live in. Let's help you in the Dream Business community. Yes, you. Let's try to give you the information you need now to boost your career or business. And I'll be there every step of the way, helping you, along with other experts in many industries. Are you ready for accelerated success? Check it out, the Dream Business community at tonydurso.com/community. That's tonydurso.com/community. Do you like the awesome interviews on Revenue Chat? Please help others discover these interviews on iTunes by giving a kind review if you like them. Go to tonydurso.com/iTunes and give a few sentences about what you liked. Let me know and I'll send you something to show my appreciation. That's tonydurso.com/iTunes. And thanks so much. And we're back with Carol Sanford talking about the 3 non-negotiable imperatives for 10x growth. Now, Carol, you have the same clients, customers, for a long time. You have the relationships for umpteen years and decades. How do you keep the same customers forever?
Well, it's the same thing I tell the people who are my clients and customers, which is you know them and love them, and you care about how successful they are in life, not how successful you are in life. So if you spend all your time thinking, how do I get them to pay attention to me? Like I tell people, don't ever say thanks for your support. Don't ever comment on, we're really thank you for your business. Those are the dumbest things you could possibly say. What you want to do is thank people if you've got to do something for letting you contribute to their success. That's what's exciting is you get to be a part of what they're creating and you get to be an innovative member of their team. Now, you do that by coming to understand their essence. Now, I was just on the phone this morning with a company in California called Orchard Supply Hardware, and they're 80 years old. They started as a co-op. They now are owned by Lowe's Hardware, and we're looking at finding their essence. But one of the things that I heard from them was that they are extraordinary in making sure that everything they do is intended to support the creativity of the person who does their own, mostly do-it-yourself, or the contractors who come there. And what they will do is get in a truck if they have to, and they will drive somewhere to get them what they needed. They will find a way to make sure that there's something new they hadn't thought of when they come in, which keeps people coming back in. When you get people counting on you for the next product, when you get them counting on you so they wait in line to see what you did for them, or they can hardly wait to the next show if it's a technology thing to see what you offered, they are now, the counting on you is a really important piece. You feel accountable for them being, I call it being their R&D department and their strategist. If that's what you do for them, when I start working with a company, I invest in all of them. That's my way of saying, you know, I'm buying Google stock and DuPont stock and Colgate Palmolive stock because I am investing in you. And I'm going to come so committed that I'm wearing the hat with the mind of a CEO for your business. And everything I do will be to help you become more strategic, more innovative, and I will work with you and teach you to work that way. My clients count on me. And even if I'm not being paid by them, I say, you can never get rid of me. Even if you stop paying me, I will never stop trying to innovate. And I still send people notes that I haven't worked with for quite a few years. But all of them invite me at Christmas or invite me when I'm in town to stay connected. And it's because I deeply love them. I love their businesses. And everything I do is for their success, not just mine.
That is astounding. That is, wow, love it. What a good point to do that regardless. And it's not like dropping communication once the contract is done. You stay in touch with them. You keep off making offerings or inviting them or encouraging them to communicate with you and your company, and you keep them involved. That is brilliant. And actually, it's, I think, the very proper way to do business. I don't quite see that as an American philosophy. I see that as more of a European almost philosophy where the relationship is much more important than the business, whereas, and I could be wrong, please don't everybody, don't shoot me, but I'm only the piano player here, but it just seems, you know, Americans can sometimes get more involved in the business and the revenue, and that's it, and once you're done, you're done. But when you keep that relationship going, it opens up more levels. It's really interesting, and I see that you do that, whether or not that was your intent or not. I'm just translating how I see it. I love it.
Let me add just a little bit to it, because first, I never try and get them to stay in communication with me. I assume it's my responsibility to do that. That's like in a marriage. I don't expect you to keep to fuss at you that you're not staying connected or ask you to talk to me. I keep figuring out how to help you. And the people who I am connected with want to be connected with me. They're always finding a way. They send me notes, they send follow-up, and I do vice versa. So I think of it's like I've married a bunch of CEOs. But as far as the U.S. and Europe, for me, it's really dependent on particular leaders. Like not everybody in the world would choose to work with me because I haven't talked much about my deeply contrarian ideas, but a lot of them have to do with how you structure work, how it is you do strategy, how you think about things like sustainability, which I think is way too small a way to think of it. those people would not work with me if they weren't getting a lot of success in their personal lives, their business lives, their ability to take what I do out into communities like we did in South Africa. That connection is deeply important, and it's really leader dependent. Now, there is a cultural thing in the U.S. where we are rugged individuals, and we do tend to be a little more arrogant, full of a bit of hubris, a little bit self-centered, and it is necessary in some ways. We need to develop the entrepreneurial thing a little more, but it's necessary for that entrepreneurial energy. If you could couple that with, in the U.S., and this is part of what I work on, with what I call external considering, where you know that it's not about you, that the world will be better if you make it better and then you live in it. It's not about an extractive model where I get what I need. It is a value-adding process, not value-added. I hate that people co-opted my term and my teacher's term from value-adding to value-added. And when they did that, they made it an extractive idea rather than a reciprocity, a deep, multi-dimensional, multi-level reciprocity. That's what it is that you need to be doing in order to keep people forever because they don't want to get rid of you.
I love it. Beautiful points of view. It's actually almost an art form, the way you've taken it and where you've taken it. I absolutely love it. Thank you for sharing all that, Carol. And now perhaps one of the more important questions of this interview is, let's talk about purpose. I'd like to know, please, what motivates and drives you? And I know you've mentioned a little bit about it, but perhaps now you can expand a little more on that.
Yeah, so my motivation is very intrinsic. I, believe it or not, my work is about consciousness. Now, that sounds very strange on a program called Revenue Chat, right? What the hell do you mean by consciousness? It's a very practical idea. It means that I actually can see my effort and the effect it has on anyone next to me. Now, you know, a marriage and parenting and the things that are close to you work better if you can think, what am I about to say? What effect is this going to produce? And can I become self-managing in regard to all my relationships? So I've just taken that to the scale also. And I, by the way, I did run a program for some years on what I called healthy family dynamics, on parenting and having healthy families, use the same philosophy. And I do some of it with education groups on how it is you build schools doing this. But the real key is, how do you get, what drives me is this idea of building this capacity for consciousness, because I believe it would make the world a much easier to live in place. We would not spend as much time at war. I mean, I guess I sound a little bit like over the top, but I deeply believe, because I worked in South Africa and I saw the power of what we were doing. Colgate-Palmolive, and this is the kind of thing that drives me. What we did in South Africa was we took a company which had 3,000 people internal, and then there were another 3,000 or so suppliers, vendors, who we knew we were going to affect. And as apartheid was coming apart, I was asked by the general manager to come help. And, you know, it was kind of a dangerous situation. But we knew that it was one of those chances of a lifetime in a world to really change perspective and turn something. So we built the idea that you could build a great country while you built a great company. And in that process of the work we did, we asked everyone within the company to come up with something to do out into the world. And this is in my book, The Responsible Business. I tell this story about how it actually happened. We asked everyone to come up with something that would make the country better, and it would make the company better while they did it. And so there's this guy, Isaac Mashiel, who decided he wanted to improve the oral health of the children in townships. That's a Colgate-Palmolive business, right? And children were losing their teeth. I mean, by the time people were 30, they had no teeth left, and of course, their health was deteriorating. So what drives me is teaching people how to align that same set of high-powered values with what it is that it takes life to work effectively internally, including financial return, and what it takes for these people to get home to their families. They improve their ability to parent. So that multi-level capacity to change people's effectiveness, to change how they relate. And as a result of what we did, we improved the oral health in Soweto and Alexandria significantly. Isaac worked with a group of dentists to do this, and women setting up small businesses. And Mandela gave us something called the Constitutional Award, which was very exciting. I got to feel like I was part of it, although I wasn't part of the company. I was just an educator for them. But that was because we were able to change the makeup of the top of the company from being 95% white Africans to being 95% Black Africans, which was required by the Constitution over a five-year period. It had to match the racial profile or index, I guess they called it. And everyone said, you can't do that. These people haven't been in school. And what I said is, they're smart people. And sure enough, we were able in 6 months to do education, and they had been trying to figure out how to contribute. They turned that company around. We didn't lay off one person in that process. Only one guy left out of those 3,000. So, I mean, you can probably hear the excitement in my voice, and it's pretty easy to tell what motivates me and what I'm driven by, which is to make that level of difference on the planet. I worked a little in the Middle East just before the Arab Spring, and when it happened, it pulled apart everything we were about to do there, and I'm really sad about that. But I'm 74 years old now, and I feel like I've got at least one more and maybe two more of that level of effort in me to make that level of difference, to have us all have a world that works better for one another.
That is so profound and astounding, Carol. Thank you for sharing all that. You take multi-level to a whole new level, not to be too much of a pun on words, but it just shows so much how you care, and that care factor, believe it or not, everyone, translates into effectively growing businesses, generating exponential returns year after year after year. And I see it as short and concise as this interview opportunity is with you, Carol. I see it even on a small scale. I see how profound that is and how business life-changing. Very cool. Very cool. Thank you for sharing all that.
Let me just give you the numbers on that. So in South Africa, from 92 to 95, for the first year, we were growing revenue by 40% a quarter. Not a year, a quarter. And that was because we had suddenly changed what was driving this dual level of build a great country while you build a great company. And by the second year, it had slowed down. So we were only doing about 30% a quarter. And by year three, at the end of it, when I left, they were down to only 20% a quarter.
Wow.
So this pays off like crazy. Colgate originally thought they wanted to close the whole thing down. And they were shocked because Stelios Sesos, who was the general manager at that point, just knew that he was laying off 6,000 people when there was already a 50 to 70% unemployment rate, depending on what part of South Africa you were in. So this there is no difference between what it takes to run a great company financially and those three levers of earnings, margins, and cash flow, and what it takes to actually change and make people's lives filled with dignity, filled with contribution, and to help communities while you're there. I hope people look at the responsible business and pull out that story. It's spread out through the book, but it inspires everyone who reads it.
Which book is this? The Responsible Business?
Yep, book? It's Responsible Business, because that's the book that has more big companies in it, although it has a few smaller ones too, where The Responsible Entrepreneur is about smaller businesses, including one Google story about a smaller part of Google, an innovation lab, and how when you're even small, you can do pretty amazing things to try and change how you're doing. It's also pretty good for impact investors who want to know how to invest in the right kind of things that will make the world better while it gives them a decent return.
Got it. And Carol, can the Revenue Chat audience get the copies of those books and find out more about it at the website carolsanfordinstitute.com?
You can. It will click you straight through to Amazon. So you can go to my website, carolsanfordinstitute.com, and click on buy a book, or carolsanford.com and buy a book. Or you can just go straight to Amazon. I mean, I don't sell them. It's a Wiley publication. It's a large publisher. And I'll have a new book out next year. I'll send you the note.
That would be fantastic. And I would truly like to interview you on that before, during, or after that release.
Sure.
Very cool. Excellent. Well, Carol, this has been insightful and provocative. And we are close to wrapping up. Is there anything else that you would like our audience to know about, please?
I'm about to start in Europe, if any from there listens, as well as in Seattle area and probably California, a small business series that will run a year, and you meet a few times a year, and then some webinars in between. And if people would like to learn how to apply all of these to a smaller scale, small to mid-sized business, just send me an email at carol@carolsanford.com. And I will make sure that you get added to the list of it coming up, or you can sign up for my newsletter on either of the websites we mentioned, carolsanfordinstitute.com or carolsanford.com.
Great. Great. So Revenue Chat audience, please take advantage of this. This is one of the greats, someone that's been there for a long time and has helped so many companies that are household name brands and household names today, has helped them grow into the giants that they are, or been there and given a lot of input. So please take advantage and email carol@carolsanford.com or go to her website and contact her and check out the books and do yourself and your business a great favor. Well, thank you very, very much, Carol. Again, truly, it's an honor to have you on the show. I learned a lot. I am impressed by what you've done. I just can't but thank you so much for taking the time to do this with us.
Well, Tony, I thank you for inviting me. I love to tell these stories, especially to people who want to hear them. So thank you.
Great. Well, once again, everyone, this is Carol Sanford, and her website is carolsanfordinstitute.com, and please check out her books. Well, all right. Well, thank you again, everyone, and stay tuned to our next show on Revenue Chat. Our next episode is 105 with Susan Martin. She ran her own successful companies for over 25 years, and then began to help others achieve business sanity. She helps business owners and self-employed professionals direct where they want their business to go and how to get it there so that they can be profitable and productive doing the work they love. And she helps them do all of this without engaging in the insanity that's all too common in small businesses today. Susan gives us the 5 simple steps to business sanity on the next episode of Revenue Chat. All right. Thanks again, everyone. And until next time, remember, you can make life better for yourself and everyone. Choose wisely.